to More Than a Grad podcast.
I'm Bandy, Rusey Welfare Officer.
And I'm Rachel, Rusey President.
So Rachel, what are we going to be speaking about in this episode?
We are going to be speaking all about money. It's a topic that, like, I think every student struggles with at some point. And yeah, it's just a common theme throughout uni, having none, wanting more, wishing you hadn't spent your into your overdraft. But yeah, today we have the lovely money advisor from Rusey joining us.
Hello, I'm Barbara. I don't know if I should give a bit of an introduction, but Rachel said, I am a money advisor at Rusey. I also do academic advice, but mainly money advice. And I've been working for the advice service for a bit over a year now. So yeah, that's me.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on.
No, you're welcome.
Yes.
Bandy, do you want to ask our first question? Just dive right in.
I guess the first question is, how do student loans work?
Well, this is kind of a very big question. I'm sure most students probably are quite aware how student loans work, but I think there's actually so much misinformation about student loans out there. But kind of generally speaking, for undergraduates, there are two loans. So there's the tuition loan and then there's the maintenance loan. The tuition loan, you probably will never ever see. It gets paid directly to the university. And then maintenance loan is essentially for all your living costs. But that is very much based on your household income. So I'm sure most students at some point will have had to ask their parents to fill in loads and loads of forms. Those are really, really important because they completely decide how much of a student loan you get. And that is for home students. Then it's a completely different story if you're an EU student, and then again, another completely different story if you're an international student. But generally speaking, for home students, that is what you're entitled to. So a tuition loan and a maintenance loan. And there's so much other stuff that kind of goes into it, but I won't bore you with the details. But yeah.
Amazing. So one of the questions, like, I would love to ask, because, like, I feel like I've fallen prey to so many of them, are the myths around student loans. Mm. So, like, there's so many, and I know that you pulled out for us some of the most common ones you hear. Can you just run us through that?
Yeah, well, I mean, so all of us were students at one point, and I think as a student, you do get told, or there's just loads of stuff kind of like floating about myths, and you hear things and no one really knows the answer. And I think that's quite a big problem amongst students. Like, I heard so many things that I thought were true. Like, for example, I heard that if you move abroad, that all your loans get written off. I don't know whether you guys have...
Oh, yes, no, I did hear about that.
Yeah, so people basically said that if you move abroad, then the government can't really be bothered to try and, like, chase you down, and then they wipe your student loan. So I actually, after university, moved abroad, and I learned the truth the hard way. Like, you pay so much more of your student loan if you move abroad. And they definitely do not forget about you. And if you don't let the government know, they will automatically take about £200 out of your account each month and let them know. Yes.
Wow.
That's one thing that I always kind of want to let students know, because obviously at the University of Reading, we have a lot of international students who, after their degree, they move back home. And then they think either that they can repay the student loan at the same rate that people in the UK repay it, or that they don't have to repay it at all. But actually, it's calculated in a very different way. So for example, when I finished my degree, I moved to Vietnam. So in the UK, the repayment threshold at the time, I think, was £25,000, and then you pay 9% of whatever you earn over £25,000. In Vietnam, the threshold was £9,000. You paid it back so much more quickly. And I think that's something to really be aware of, that I don't think people generally know.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I think that one's probably a good one to know. Then I think that one's quite a rogue one. Put that one aside. I think repayments on the whole are things that people get quite, I think, unnecessarily worried about, I guess. I don't know. Did you guys get quite worried about the thought of repaying your student loan when you graduated?
Yeah, I think, like, I don't know about Bandy, but I just didn't really understand the repayment and when it would start. Mm. Like, when I came into this job, I was like, okay, I don't think that's going to pass the threshold. But I thought the threshold was 25,000. But then I recently got an email, and I think this is right, though. It's like now to like something up to like 27,000, I'll start repaying.
Yeah. Yeah. So it goes up every.
What? I didn't know that. So I'm.
Surprise!
Oh, God. Okay. That's kind of nice, but kind of not nice. I don't know. Like, I kind of. I guess this is my whole thing about money, you kind of will get is that. I didn't really think about it, I'm not gonna lie to you. I knew you had to pay it back some point, but the government from my time being a student was quite nice about it, and it's not, and I kind of knew that you wouldn't pay it off straight away, but I didn't realize that there's interest on student loans, or am I making that up?
Oh yeah, no, there is, and the interest is quite high. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, Mandy, I think your attitude towards it is quite a good one, because I think we need to reframe the way that we look at student loans, and they're good. They're good loans. I mean, in terms of loans that you can take out, a student loan is probably one of the best ones you can take out. And what you say about the government is you will only ever repay it when it's affordable to you. Rachel, as you said, the threshold goes up every year. So it goes up according to inflation. So if this year it's 27, then next year it will be more. And then the year after it will be even more. But one interesting fact that I always kind of tell people that I think they find quite interesting was there was a study by the Institute of Fiscal Studies that basically made an estimate as to how many people they think will pay off their student loan in full. You guys to guess what percentage of people they estimated.
I'm going to guess 20%.
I was going to guess 20%.
It's less. It's 17.
Wow.
Yeah. So the thing is, your student loan also gets written off after 30 years. And the way that you repay it is so, I mean, there's such small amounts, obviously, depending on how much you earn. But then also you're gaining interest on your loan. So actually, whenever people are worried about paying off their student loan, I pretty much always tell them not to worry about it, because the chances of them paying it off are so unlikely that, I don't know. I personally think of it as an education tax instead of a loan.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. Like, because I've had friends who their parents have decided they didn't want them to take out a student loan at all. And they're just like, oh, I'm just going to pay the whole thing. And I mean, do what you want with your money. Like, that's completely your decision. But from what you're saying, it seems like a wise move almost, even maybe potentially if you have the money, to actually just get a student loan, because if you're not going to end up paying all off in full and it's proportional to your income, like it makes sense.
Can you like choose the amount you pay each month, or is that like the smallest amount, if that makes sense? I remember my teacher, and I was in year five, she was like, yeah, I'm still repaying my student loan off, and that like freaked me out, and I was like, oh my god, it must be like £1,000 a month or something. I mean, that this is like year five, Bandy. But yeah,
I mean, you can choose to pay off more than you're charged. So obviously, if you're above the threshold, you will be paying 9% of anything above that threshold, and that gets taken out with your tax. So in your payslip, it gets automatically taken out. You have no choice on that. You can choose to pay more, but generally speaking, the advice is not to, because it's actually not beneficial to you to pay off more. I'm sure you guys have heard of the money saving expert. He is such a big advocate of just not paying more than you have to. And that's kind of the advice that I also give. It just doesn't really make sense to pay off more, particularly if most of us will not pay all of it off. So why would you pay more money than you may actually have to pay off, if that makes sense?
Is that Martin Lewis from Martin Lewis Money?
It is Martin Lewis, yeah.
I kind of fancy him, you know, in a very odd way.
I guess he's quite charming.
You look at my bank account and be like, absolutely not, I'm not.
So, just moving on to any, like, other myths that you
might... Oh, yeah, there are so many. Well, another one. There's
so many, because, like, I hear, like, I end up in conversations with other graduates who have no clue like what's really going on, and prey to myths so easily.
Well, I guess kind of like building on what we just said, I think another myth that a lot of people kind of believe, I guess, is that the more of a loan they take out, the higher their repayments will be. But like we said, you know, if you take out £1,000 for your whole degree, and if you take out £40,000 for your whole degree, you're still paying it back at exactly the same rate. Obviously your interest will vary, but you're paying it off at the same rate. So, you know, when people are worried about taking out more, generally, again, I tell them not to worry, just take out as much as you need. And it's better to have the money now than to struggle now, but then fundamentally still have the same results later on.
Yeah, definitely.
Then one, this one, I feel like I have a bit of like anecdotal evidence with this. I don't know whether you guys had the same experience, but when I was in sixth form, I remember my head of year so distinctly. I remember him saying that everybody can afford to go to university. And he explained kind of the student loan system, blah, blah, blah. And then I went to uni and I realized not everyone can afford to go to university. And then coming into this job, I realized even more so how that's true, because so the way that the student loan works is if you are below the minimum income, so I believe that's around £25,000. So if your household income is less than £25,000, you get the maximum student loan. And the government has essentially decided that the maximum student loan is the expectation of how much it costs for a year at university. So that's around £9,000. So if your family income is higher, and let's say you get a maintenance loan of £4,000, the expectation and the government's expectation is that your parental contribution is the excess towards £9,000. So if you're getting £4,000, the expectation is the parental contribution is £5,000. And I don't think that's spoken about enough, because I remember, so I went to university in Bristol. Bristol is very expensive. I mean, Reading's also very expensive, but my student loan didn't even cover my rent. And I was so shocked. I was like, how do people survive on this? And I had friends who their parents weren't willing to give them any money, and they didn't survive. Like, they genuinely just had no money. And I remember thinking about my head of year and thinking, but he said everyone can afford to go to university. Like, this is such a lie. And I think they're, I mean, obviously all the information is out there, and I think the student loan company does somewhere have this information, but I just wish it was more common knowledge that the parental support is really expected a lot more than students think, you know?
Oh, that's so shocking as well, especially when, like, there are people who don't have good relationships with their parents.
Right.
I remember hearing, and I was absolutely shocked by this, there was a case in uni where a guy wasn't showing up to his lectures, and they asked him why, and he found out that, like, his dad had been taking a student loan off him, and like, he had to get a full, like, basically a full-time job because he could not support himself. And I mean, this year, like, if you have a bad relationship with your parents, oh, my doorbell just went off, 1 minute.
No, but, like, I think that's so true, Barbara, like, in a sense of, like, you know, what if you're not, you know, what if you're kind of in the middle of it? Like, if your parents earn 30k, and, you know, like, for example, like in my case, like, me and my brother were both going off to university at the same time. So, like, was the government expecting my parents to fork out like 9 grand for, like, you know, for half? Like, it really didn't make any sense. And and, like, obviously, like, with all, like, extracurricular activities, with, like, sports, societies, that costs, like, membership, like, going out, that costs, like, food costs, like, doing, you know, universities, I think, in a sense, only enjoyable if you have money.
And I think, obviously, as well, I mean, the student loans are pretty standard across the UK, apart from if you're in London. And if you went to university in the north and you go to university in Reading, you are paying a very, very different amount of money for your cost of living, and yet you're receiving the same student loan. But I think you're right, Bundy. I mean, I found university to be really, really expensive. I think rent, I don't know what your guys' experience with rent is, but rent was, for students, is really, really expensive, particularly when you don't actually get that much for your money.
No, exactly. And I think, like, it's such, I think I was speaking to Jane, a housing advice officer, I think yesterday, how she thought actually if a 4-bedroom house was rented out to a family, that would cost like 1,200 per se in Reading. But landlords for students are charging each room, so they are laughing in the money. And, like, why is that the case? I don't get why they can do that. And yes, is not very nice, but yeah, most of my student loan went to housing, which is, like, great.
Yeah, it's just, it is really, really expensive. And I mean, don't get me wrong, the most universities, and I know University of Reading, has great resources in place to support students if they find themselves in really, really difficult financial situations. Like, I would really, really encourage, obviously, students to come to the advice service if they need advice, but then also the student financial services at the uni are really good at helping. And
yes, they are. Oh my God, yeah. I'm like, during my placement year, I don't know if we'll go on a tangent, but I guess we are speaking about at the end of the day, but I did a placement year, and in psychology they don't pay you for your placement, so I had to do another job just to pay for my travel expenses to work. So yeah, I was pretty much broke, and I then couldn't afford like to travel to work anymore. And then I think I went to University of Reading like student finance like place, and then I like sent out all my, I had to like send out loads of bank statements, and like, this is how much I'm earning, da, 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 da. And they calculated it, and then they gave me like money so that I didn't have to work like, you know, two free shifts a week just to afford work.
So
I think it was a student hardship fund or something. People don't know about this.
It's a tricky one because obviously it's such an amazing resource, but obviously the money that they have in this hardship fund is finite, so I think it's difficult because you obviously want students to access it, but at the same time they are picky is not the right word, but they try to give the money to the people who need it most. So although it's brilliant, I wouldn't kind of encourage everyone to try to apply for it, because there's no guarantee that you will. And I mean, as you said, you do have to provide an awful lot of evidence in order to get the hardship fund. You have to prove that you are in a lot of hardship and that you have explored other avenues of funding before going. But you know, the university will try its best to not have you be in financial crisis, which I think is really good. But I think I don't know if I think the government needs to give more money or what needs to be done, really. But I think oftentimes with money, the issue is education. I think people just need to have more knowledge about what they're getting themselves into. I think university, for a lot of first years, they just don't anticipate how expensive university is going to be.
Yeah, definitely.
For a lot of, I don't know about you guys, but for me, for sure, the first time I got my student loan come through, it was the first time I had thousands in my bank account. And I think as an 18-year-old, having thousands in your bank account is a bit of a crazy,
misleading kind of thing.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, you just spend it all at once because you're like, wow, I've never had this kind of money.
Yeah, no, my boyfriend's like dad, he had his student loan, and he would budget it and give it to him like each month, I think, for like first year and second year, which I thought was quite a good idea, because like I literally did spend like half of my student loan.
Yeah.
And it's, you think £1,000 really goes a long way, but it doesn't. Yeah.
No, I kind of thought
when I kind of went into like the adult world, I say with like inverted commas, that I was like, £100 is like the new £10. Like, £100 goes nowhere. Like, no. And it's so depressing, because I don't know about you guys, but to me, up until the point I was like 17, £100 was like a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I was spending £100 on the bills and like, you know, one food shop together. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's just draining out so quickly.
Yeah. It really doesn't stretch far. And I think, I mean, So I've had experience living abroad. I've lived in 4 different countries. And
wow, you're so well traveled.
God, it does make it sound really amazing. Honestly, I lived in Germany and Italy as part of my degree. So it doesn't sound as amazing as it actually is. But I remember just living abroad and thinking, wow, this is so weird. Like, I can afford to do things and things aren't that expensive. And then I looked into it and I actually found that within Europe, the UK has the greatest disparity between the cost of living and income. So it's actually really, really unaffordable to live in the UK. And I think people are really finding that. I mean, graduates, I know I really struggled with this. I was like, how do people afford to work full time and pay their rent and do everything they enjoy? Like, my understanding was that if you worked full time, you could afford to do that. And then the realization was, but you may not be able to. And that really shocked me.
So
I think, I mean, it's quite a shock, I think, kind of learning how to deal with money and learning that money just does not go as far as you once thought it would, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. I think as well, I don't know about you, Bandy, but like when I was kind of looking at graduate jobs for the first time, like the pay really, like the first, because it's a first job, really wasn't that much, like when you could factor everything in. So like when you factored in your rent, like
council tax,
council tax, suddenly like when you're factoring everything in, and literally like it just like covers what you need. And I think like you think like, oh, I'll get a full-time job and I'll be able to pay for everything, but like it often doesn't. And
yeah,
really quite hard when you're, especially if you were anxious about kind of like in your head like your student loan as well, and like, oh my god, I'm so in debt and stuff. But I think it's quite reassuring to hear, you know, like until your income is at the right level, you won't be paying that back.
Yeah. And also I should say, with your student loan, you actually, even if from day dot you start earning £50,000, you actually don't start paying your student loan off until the start of the next tax year. So if you graduate in the summer, you won't start repaying it until the April of the next year.
If Andy and I had landed our bum in the butter, as it were.
I've never heard that expression.
My mom used it the other day and I was like, oh, I'm stealing that. And we got a £50,000 salary for goodness knows what. We wouldn't be paying it back until next April.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, Bandy.
Let's quit, Rachel. Let's
run away. Let's run away.
TikTok stars and all that.
But this is what I mean. Like, I do think the government in some ways does really try to help graduates. And I don't know, I do quite like the student loan. I mean, there are problems with it for sure, but on the whole, I think it's such a, particularly when you compare to other countries.
Oh my God, America, Lord Christ.
Yeah. I don't, because I had a few American friends, and like I said, when I had this nightmare being in Vietnam and suddenly £200 was taken out of my account, I was so shocked, and I was talking to my American friends about it, and they were like, is that it? Is that all you're paying back? And I was in such shock. I was like, what do you mean? And they said they started paying back their loan the minute they graduated, whether they had a job or didn't have a job, and payments were ridiculous. And I was like, I don't understand how that system works in America. And they said it does well, it doesn't really work, does it? But I do think we're lucky in the UK.
I guess this is like a nice segue into like our next question in terms of like, what's the difference between kind of EU international and like home students? All I know, which is probably really bad knowledge, is that I know that international students just pay so much more in tuition fee.
Yeah, so I guess home students, their tuition fees are subsidised by the government because, you know, in theory, hopefully we'll pay tax one day and, you know, we're paying into the whole system. So international students, they do pay more. I don't want to kind of say how much they pay more. I think it does vary, but it's quite a lot more. I would say nearly maybe double per year. And then they're not entitled to any kind of student loan. So then EU students, they are entitled to a tuition loan, but they're not entitled to a maintenance loan. And then home students are obviously entitled to both. But then there are also some kind of, I don't want to call it a loophole, but just kind of things that change. If you've been living in the UK 3 years prior to the beginning of your course, and so if you're an EU student and you've been living in the UK 3 years prior to your course, you may be entitled to a maintenance loan. Also, if you're a home student and you haven't been living in the UK for the last 3 years prior to your course, you're then also not entitled to a maintenance loan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So there are these odd little rules where we think we're kind of entitled to everything, but it may turn out that you're not, basically. So
so for example, like if my, you know, dad was, let's say, a millionaire, he's not, but like let's pretend, would I, like, because I remember some of my friends who were, you know, really really rich at Reading, and they didn't get any maintenance loans, so I didn't know if they were entitled to it still but just didn't take it, or that the government was like, just like, no, your parents earn way too much, like you can afford uni kind of thing.
Oh, everyone's entitled to a maintenance loan, so you can take out anyone can take out the minimum maintenance loan, but maybe they just decided that if their family can afford it, that it's more affordable for them to pay if they had, you know, plans of grandeur in the future of having very well paid jobs, and then at one point paying it back and then paying back more than they originally took out, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Could I ask a question on the other end of that? Mm-hmm. Or I guess it's kind of like a, for people who really like went into their overdraft, like during uni, you know, can't get by on their maintenance loan, had to get a second job and still very much in their overdraft. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure it's a common problem you see. Like, what is the kind of first bit of advice you probably want to give to those students?
So generally speaking, I think is what I would advise is the student support fund. If I meet with a student and I've found that they have explored all options, like you say, found a second job, used an overdraft, they took out the maintenance loan that they're entitled to, they're getting the full amount they're entitled to, then I would look to what's the student support fund. Then there are also kind of other things you can explore. There is a great website called Turn to Us, on which you can search for charities and organizations that basically offer grants or hardship funds and things like that, and you can make applications through this website to those charities. I think the issue now that we're finding is that because of Corona, I mean, I don't want to generalize, but I think oftentimes the people that work at these organizations and charities are lovely older ladies who are volunteering and things like that. And we're finding now they're not really volunteering as much, or they're not meeting as much. I think obviously everyone's kind of staying at home a lot, and organizations and charities are really struggling to work basically. So these charities and things, they are, it's difficult to get hardship funds now. And obviously a lot of people are in a lot of financial hardship, but in terms of welfare benefits, students aren't entitled to them, which is really difficult for a lot of students, because if the student loan doesn't stretch far enough, if they can't get money from their parents, and if they can't get a second job, which a lot of students right now aren't able to find work, there aren't really that many other options available to students, which is a hard pill to swallow. But yeah, it's very, very difficult. And I think right now we're finding that there isn't that much advice we can offer to students. I know that sounds really bleak, but it's just a very, very difficult time.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie, my heart bleeds for students right now, especially the ones that are in their final year and they're already struggling because of the job market and just how tough that's going to be. And you know, like if you're already well into your overdraft and then know that you're up against that, like I really feel well. Like I would so strongly encourage, you know, getting like everything you can now in terms of using the career support we have at university to be ready for that, so that you're in the best position possible, so that you can come out of your overdraft and you do have money, you know, in six like months time.
Yeah, and I think a few people have kind of highlighted the gap where, so obviously the government has put a lot of programs and initiatives in place to support people who, you know, have been furloughed or are self-employed and things like that. But a huge gap is new graduates. I mean, these are people that haven't been furloughed. These are people that aren't self-employed. They're just people that have yet to find a job in an already really, really, really difficult job market. And I mean, as graduates ourselves, I don't know how your job hunting experience was, but it's hard out there. It's so hard because obviously all employers want some kind of experience, and you know, someone needs to give you a chance for you to get that experience, and no one's willing to give you a chance and things like that. And I agree with you, Rachel. My heart bleed for students and finalists and things like that, and I just hope things will get better.
Definitely.
But
let's say, because there's another point we want to kind of like make, let's say, you know, you manage to get a job, like, well done, and it pays okay, and luckily for you, you're beginning to be in a position where you can save money, like, some advice around saving money, and then also maybe a little bit on kind of 5 years on from that. Like, we're looking at potentially like starting looking at kind of credit scores and wanting to do that kind of thing and getting ready to 10 years on, I don't know, let's see, millennial market now about getting housing, but you know, some point in the future, potentially trying to get a mortgage and trying to like preparing yourself, because I don't feel like, I don't know about you, Brandy, but I do not feel prepared for 10, 20 years time when potentially I want to go and get a mortgage to be in that position that I feel like I'm financially strong enough to.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess probably one of the best things about new graduates is that your overdraft, if you already have a student bank account, your overdraft continues into your graduate life. For mine, continued for about 2 years. I think it depends on each bank, but it basically means that you have a fee-free, that's not right, how do you say that? A payment-free? A free overdraft.
But like no interest loan or?
Yeah, you know when you're a student, you don't pay for your overdraft. But then now, if I were to be in my overdraft, I'd pay for it. But
yeah.
2 years after graduating, you still don't pay for your overdraft. But again, that depends on bank to bank. So that's a really great resource. And it means that obviously students who have utilized their overdraft during their student days, they don't have to completely stress about getting out of it immediately when their student ends. They can actually continue to pay it off for 1 or 2 years after they graduate. So I think that's a really great resource. It's obviously not ideal for saving. I mean, being in your overdraft isn't great for saving, but it's a good kind of fallback to have.
Yeah.
I think in terms of savings, and I think this might be a little controversial. It's not controversial. It's more, I mean, it is quite like fact-based, but investment is really, really good. Everybody now talks about how investing is the best way to save, because particularly now when, you know, most countries are falling into a recession and things like that, interest rates on bank, on savings accounts are non-existent. I mean, yeah. I think one of my bank accounts, it's like 0.1% interest rate, and it just doesn't make sense to put money aside in that savings account if I'm wanting to save for the future. If you want to save for short-term plans, like, I don't know, next year you want to go traveling, great, put it into a savings account if you want to access it quickly. But I think if you are looking to save for the long term, so like you said, if you want to buy a house, or I don't know, in you want a huge wedding in 10 years time, whatever that may be, investment is a really, really good option, because investment just means that you get a much bigger return, not in the short term, but in the long term. And I think I don't know enough about investment to kind of lecture you guys on it.
Yeah, so I was about to ask, like, I've heard like, oh, you need to invest, but I'm just like, how? And like, what? And like, do you need to do your research? And it's so scary.
Yeah, so I mean, for example, I have a stocks and shares ISA, and I think the thing about investing is it just sounds so, so terrifying, but it's honestly not. Like, you can look at most banks or organizations in which you can invest. They are very user-friendly, because I think they are also really aware of how scary investment seems. Mm-hmm. But you can literally, I don't know, invest like £20 a month, or invest however much you can afford. And obviously, you know, stocks can go up and down. Things really do fluctuate with investment. So the best thing to do is to diversify. So if you invest £20 a month, it might make sense to put £5 into one thing, £5 into another thing, £5 into another thing, and then £5 into a final thing. So that if one drops, you'd kind of hope that others go up, so that the fluctuations kind of even themselves out. But investment is just really, really good. And one phrase that has really stuck with me that all kind of investment websites say is that the best time to invest was yesterday. And it's so true. Like, you do really need to just start now to see the rewards in the future. So if you're looking towards the next 5-10 years, I would really, really say investment is a very, very good thing to do. But then, as you asked about buying a house, oh gosh, I have so many thoughts on this.
A dream.
It's just, I mean, I'm sure a lot of us have heard of the term generation rent. And I was actually looking this up just earlier today, and it was suggesting that a third of the people within our generation, I think it was between the age of like 20 to 39 or something, will never buy, and a third of us will continue renting. And then they were saying that half of us would actually continue renting into our 40s.
No.
I think, yeah, I do just think it's so, so unaffordable to buy in the UK. And I also don't know if people are aware of the, I guess they're not really hidden costs, but the costs associated with buying a house. So for example, stamp duty is a huge, huge cost that I think a lot of people have heard of, but they're not really sure what it is. But it's essentially just a tax on buying a house, which can go into the thousands. It's very, very expensive.
Wow.
Also mortgages. So some of my friends have started buying houses, and honestly, they've told me horror stories to the point where I'm like, I don't think this is for me. But basically that there's an income to loan ratio with buying a house, right? So what's the average price of a flat in Reading? Let's say like 200,000?
Yeah, 200,000.
Let's say 200,000. So let's say you put down a 10% deposit, you put down £20,000, and you need to take out £180,000.
Oh,
only take out between 3 to 5 times your income. So let's say your income and a graduate income right now on average is like £23,000. So let's round that up to 25. So the maximum you could take out on a mortgage is £125,000. So you can't even buy, even if you have a deposit, if you have a 10% deposit, you can't take out a mortgage because you don't earn enough, which means that essentially you do kind of, or most of us will probably need to buy with another person, which is great if you have a partner or you have a really good friend that you want to buy a house with, but it's just really unaffordable. And then on top of that, your mortgage repayments are just really high. So I think, you know, don't beat yourself up about not being on the property ladder straight away, because it is hard. And I think if you are seeing other people buying, they are probably the exception more so than the rule, because for our generation it is really hard. But I think preparing now, investing little amounts or putting little amounts away now and again, it will set you up better for the future. But it's just really important to be aware of the costs associated with buying a house, because oftentimes it's a lot more expensive than you may think, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's really interesting, to be fair.
I heard this from like someone else, but that people in the UK, especially us, we're very like obsessed with like owning a home, but apparently people in Europe are just not as fast. I don't know if you found that, Barbara, like when you were traveling or anything, but I think I had a Spanish friend and she said, yeah, like people like rent and like till they're really old and they just don't really care. But I guess it's kind of like also what you value in life. And like personally for me, like I like owning a home really isn't my priority for the next 10, 20 years. It is probably just like traveling, living life, probably saving a bit.
Yeah. I mean, so my dad is actually German, so I'm half German, so half my family lives in Germany. So I have a lot of experience with Germany, and it's true, most people do rent there because they don't have a culture of loans and mortgages. So if you can't afford to outright buy a house, people don't generally buy houses and people do rent. But rent is also a lot more affordable there. It's so much more affordable. And I think that the problem in the UK is that rent oftentimes is the same amount as a mortgage.
Oh yeah,
if you can afford to pay a mortgage, why, that's more beneficial to you because you're kind of paying into your own pocket, really, aren't you? So I think it's because of that, whereas I think if our rent was half the price of what it was, then we could still afford to live our life really nicely and then not think that much about rent. But I mean, in Reading, it's not unheard of for people to pay £600-700 for a flat, which is, or even probably for a room, well, I don't know, but it's just really expensive. And I think that makes people really disenchanted with wanting to pay for rent. And that's why people want to
pay,
because it does just make more sense.
There's definitely benefits to both. Like, for example, having your own home and pay, like, means that you can start it exactly the way you want. You can get rid of walls, but then obviously renting, you've got the option, like if something breaks, like you get your landlord involved, and like you can't do that if you've got a house.
Yeah.
One of the questions I really wanted to ask you before we run out of time is like risky business, really, when it comes to money and like stuff that, like, I think a lot of young people make mistakes with money because they don't really understand how it works, or they like get really excited that they've finally got like a salary, and then they start doing things like, I'm sure credit cards are going to come up, and doing things they just can't afford. And I'd love you to like have a little go into that for us.
Yeah. So I was actually on a money course a couple of weeks ago. Well, not weeks ago, pre-corona, but, and they were talking about how people, end up in debt now and how they ended up in debt 20 years ago. And they were saying the main reason for people ending up in debt 20 years ago was because of this whole kind of keeping up with the Joneses. So people would take out loans to buy a nice car or take out loans to buy a nice sofa or whatever. But now actually the main reason that people go into debt is because of the cost of living, because it keeps going up and our incomes aren't going up. So I would probably say the biggest risks that people take is signing up to contracts that they cannot afford. So rent is a big one. Rent, I keep talking about this, but it's just really expensive. Or even just signing up, I don't know, for a car rental that you can't afford, things like that. And that kind of leads people into taking out credit cards and using credit and using money that they don't have, and then not really being able to afford the repayments on that. And that can just kind of snowball. It's very easy to take out, I shouldn't say it's easy to take out credit cards, but if you know, your credit rating is already quite bad, you can take out credit cards that have really high interest repayments, and it just does snowball. It just gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And I think that's a big problem. Just, I think being a bit more modest with your money is really important, particularly when you're young. I think one of the best pieces of advice I ever got when I worked in London from a colleague who was 10 years older than me, and she said, the best advice that I can ever give you is live with your parents for as long as you can. And obviously, living with your parents isn't potentially viable for a lot of people, but just try to live as modestly as you can until you can afford to live more luxuriously.
Okay.
I think so often for so many people, graduates, they want to move to London, they want to live that life, but they just can't really.
Yeah.
And things like that. It's just, don't take unnecessary risks. I think it can just mean that you end up in hot water. And I think credit cards are becoming very popular, aren't they? Which is difficult. Me and you were speaking about this yesterday, Rachel, like the credit rating thing. In order to buy a house, you need a good credit rate. Well, in order to take out mortgage, in order to take out loans, you need a good credit rating. So people are often not forced into taking out credit cards, but encouraged to take out credit cards. And yeah, that then encourages bad spending habits and things like that. It's really difficult to find a middle ground. But then there are so many organizations, like while you're at uni, you can come to the advice service, seek financial advice. Once you're out of uni, there are great, great resources. There's Deadline, Step Change, the CAB, the Citizens Advice. There's so many organizations that can help you with, if you have any kind of money issues or anything like that. There's just a lot. But I think the most important thing is just to have some kind of savings somewhere.
Yeah, definitely.
To fall back on, because you just don't know. I think if coronavirus has taught us anything, is you just don't know what is around the corner. You don't know if you're going to have your job next month. You just don't know. So you don't want to find yourself in a position where you're thousands in debt with no savings. Just try. I know it's a lot easier said than done, but just try to have a little cushion.
Barbara, I have a question, just a really quick question on credit score and how, so mm-hmm. you know, with an overdraft, does that affect credit score? I'm really confused.
So I don't think it does. I should double check this, because me and Rachel spoke about this yesterday, but definitely if you have an arranged overdraft, then no. So if you have arranged it with your bank, you said, you know, I want a £1,000 overdraft, then that is completely fine. You're completely right to use it. But if you go into your overdraft when it's not arranged, I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, I should check that. I'll come back to you on that one.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Well, I think that is everything that we had on our list of questions. So thank you so, so much for giving your time and kind of answering all of them.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome. Is there any departing wisdom that you'd like to leave?
Well, I guess if you have any questions, just come to the advice service. I mean, we're always really happy to help, and we love, you know, speaking to students, seeing what's up, and it's really good for us to kind of know what students are going through so that we can speak to the university about it. And, you know, try and really make change, because I think we're here to help students fundamentally, and we are aware of a lot of the issues. So if you need any advice, come speak to us. We're nice people.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. I think that is everything. Barbara, if this was normal times and we weren't over Zoom, we would definitely have done over a drink or something. We always ask our guests this question at the end of the episode. What would your drink of choice be? Would it be a cup of tea, a glass of Prosecco? What would it be?
Do you know what? Jane, the housing advisor, actually warned me about this. I have not thought about it. Oh God, it's probably going to be something really boring. I mean, my drink of choice, I don't drink, so
okay, that
eliminates anything alcoholic. Tea, probably. Oh God, that makes me sound so dumb.
I love tea.
Yeah, a good tea. I do love peppermint tea.
Oh,
it's so good. It's so good for your digestion as well. God, I'm literally digging myself a hole in it. It's so boring. But peppermint tea is so great. Yeah, that's my answer, peppermint tea.
Fab. Oh, I wish we had a cup of peppermint tea now. Thank you so much. And
thank you.
And it's been lovely to talk to you.
Thank you.
Bye.